Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
About the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
Aria.
And Mark.
We have Mark from a remote location.
Somewhere
out there. Well, I'm glad that I'm here with you, Aria. We left off last night's show without knowing what was going to be in store with your sentencing today in front of the Federal District Court Church here in New Hampshire, where the man in the robe said that you get to go away for 18 whole months.
That is the sentence, yes. 18 months of imprisonment followed by a year of supervised release.
Which your current 2 years of supervised release do not count towards.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't, I don't know. You know, I like to think that they do.
Well,
right?
It makes me feel
better to think that they do.
In that case, then, it would have been 3 years supervised release
right.
If they did.
Yeah, that's the perspective I'm taking, because that's what the guideline recommends anyway. And I was like, okay, you know, that makes me feel a little bit better about the more than 2 years that I spent on pre-supervised release or pre-trial supervised release.
He did give what they call a variance, which means that he went below what the recommended guidelines were, the guidelines for the one count of unlicensed money transmission, I believe is count. Completely victimless act of...
Well, technically it was operating an unlicensed money transmitting business, right? Like if you sell Bitcoin once, they're not able to charge you with money transmission as a result of
that's
that.
True.
It has to
that's
be
true.
Like multiple pattern times. Behavior, and then they charge you with operating an unlicensed money transmitting business.
True.
So.
That's a good point, and thank you for clarifying that. So the recommended sentence from the sentencing guidelines is 30 to 37 months. The prosecution pushed for 37 months, claiming...
Yes, they did.
Claiming that essentially you needed to be punished to send a message, to be a deterrent to other people who might consider also selling Bitcoin without asking for government permission.
Yeah, and I would like to remind people, I realize that that's probably the first time that people have heard of such a thing, but why do you think they gave Ross Ulbricht two life sentences, right? It's not
that's
new
why.
For them to sentence people as a deterrent, and it's not surprising to people. It's not unconstitutional. It may or may not be,
you know,
right? But the sentencing reform...
Whatever's constitutional and unconstitutional is sort of irrelevant. I mean, it's been 240...
Well, it's completely relevant when people say, no, that's unconstitutional. They can't do that. So it's completely relevant.
I get it. I get that part. But the Constitution is a series of preponderance of lies that have been told to us over the course of 240 years. Now,
the argument works great with libertarians.
Yeah, sure. It does work great with libertarians. It doesn't work well with judges. But there's not an impossibility that a judge is going to listen to this, so I'm going to have my say on the subject. Sentencing a person as a deterrent is the same thing as sending somebody to send a message.
That's
sending
what it is.
Somebody to send a message is sentencing a different person, the person standing in front of you, and ought not occur. The sentence itself should be the deterrent, right? Like the crime, whatever it is, ought to be the deterrent. And frankly, really, is there a difference? I mean, how many people say, oh, well, as long as she didn't get 18 months in prison, I guess I'll just go ahead and do the crime. You know, like, is there a difference between 6 months and 18 months in the average person's mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think there is.
I would strongly disagree. I would do a crime. I would vastly preferred a 6 month sentence over an 18 month sentence.
Well, duh.
Well,
but
that's
what
a huge
I'm saying
difference,
is
Mark.
That if someone, it's a huge difference to you, but to a person who has not yet committed the crime, right? that the person that the judge is sentencing, the deterrent that he is putting out there, my question is, would it make a difference to that imaginary person whether you got 6 months or 18 months? They don't think in their mind, well, 6 months is worth running an unlicensed money transmitting business. But 18 months, boy, oh boy, that's not worth it.
I think I get what you're saying, Mark. The average person doesn't want to go to jail for 6 minutes, let alone 6 months or six right. years. To them, jail is a very scary place, and only bad people go there, and they do not want to go to jail, period. So I get the
I don't think it would make a difference, probation versus prison, either. But if you've got to send the message, send the message.
Well, and the wording, send a message, was used by the prosecution with the term deterrence. And I just find this awful.
And what's the message? You should be able to read the future 5 years from now as to what the laws are going to be?
No, the message is loud and clear. And it was going to be sent today regardless of what I was sentenced to. The message, like it or not, is take the damn plea deal. That's the message that that's the message everyone is going to glean from this. Barring Ian's appeals being successful and his convictions getting overturned, the message is loud and clear. The people who took the plea deals at the first opportunities, no imprisonment. The person who ended up taking a plea deal but balked at first, imprisonment. The person who didn't take a plea deal, presumably eight guilty counts or whatever. That's the message that is sent today, loud and clear. And I hate that that's the message. I don't want that to be the message, and I don't think the judge would want that to be the message. But that's
the message.
That's the message that I can see.
Well, yeah, see,
I don't know what the judge would want. As a former prosecutor, I'm not prepared to say that he wouldn't want that. But I will say this, is the American people aren't served by this. If plea bargains only benefit government bureaucrats that are meant to take pleas, you know, the lawyers, the prosecutors, it's a benefit to them. And, of course, guilty people, right? The people, those of us out there, right, you're supposed to get whatever sentence you should get. That's the just sentence, whatever that might be. And it should be given to you by a judge after a trial. That's what the founders envisioned. I don't believe there were any plea bargains going on in 1789. So, you know, I'm just going to stick with that particular line of reasoning. And, the individual at this point has just become game theory. And it's the prosecutors who have no skin in the game. They lose nothing in the process. They just, make you offers. And you know that if you don't take the first plea, you're going to be screwed.
Yeah, that is definitely always the message with courts, that people take the plea deal, they get a better deal if there's versus a guilty finding with a jury. They'll never come right out and say that, but it's hard to look at what has happened.
They don't call it a bargain for nothing.
Yeah, it's hard to look at what has happened and not extrapolate that particular message, because the other three people who were sentenced in the Crypto 6 case, which if you don't know what we're talking about, you can go to thecrypto6.com, you can learn more about it. But basically, we got raided back in March of 2021 and have been facing ridiculous felony charges for victimless crimes.
Selling
ever since,
Bitcoin without a license.
Regarding selling Bitcoin. And so you look at the other three counts. There are the other three people that were sentenced on a plea deals. Those were wire fraud charges. Those charges, when dealing with a financial institution, normally a wire fraud charge is up to 20 years in prison, is the maximum sentence. But if it's a financial institution that is the quote-unquote victim, as they were attempting to allege in those cases, then it's up
right,
to 30.
They even filed a document alleging that, right?
Yeah, then it's up to 30 years.
Oh, I did not know that.
That one count. So the count you got the plea deal for, Aria, was the one count of the, I'm just shortening it, unlicensed money transmission business, right? So that was a maximum of 5 years in that particular case. So just on the basis of the maximum amount of time someone can go to prison for, the wire fraud charges on their face seem to be the more serious charges, right?
Six times as serious.
But
I can do basic math.
They also involve fraud.
And they have the word fraud in them, right? Which suggests a victim, even though there wasn't a victim in those cases. That's what it suggests. So when you look at that, it looks worse, right? Like if somebody looks at their criminal record when they're trying to get a job, fraud is going to be a blaring, you know, problem. It may be even harder for them to get jobs. But still, the point I'm making here is that on its face, those charges seem more severe. They are more severe as far as the potential penalty. But yet those folks got to walk away while you have to go and self-report to a federal penitentiary of some sort, some kind of prison. Maybe it'll be a low security thing. But
the places the judges said today, it will be minimum security.
So you have to go for 18 months, though, for that. And they and they didn't have to. Which, again, says that this may very well be punishing you for not taking the first plea deal.
I don't know what else it could be. And I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, what the judge was intended to do. But this is absolutely what the prosecutors intended to do. Like, cool. they wanted that exact example to be made. And the judge, you know, he had the guidelines in front of him. He went against them. He cut them in half, essentially. And that's that's wonderful. I'm very, very grateful for that, as much as one can be for being sentenced to prison, right?
Right.
But the prosecutor, so I don't know what the judge wanted, but the prosecutors telegraphed their hands pretty clearly, as far as I can tell. They wanted to punish me to the maximum degree allowable under our plea agreement. For not taking the initial plea agreement, because the details of the initial plea agreement were significantly better. And I don't know if I've ever bothered to go into the details on those, because they weren't relevant to me. At that time, I didn't feel that I had broken the law, so I couldn't ethically take a plea deal.
Was the original one a wire fraud?
No. Yeah. It was also operating an unlicensed money transmitter business.
Okay.
But that charge, the calculations, the guidelines calculations, would have been based solely off of my local Bitcoins transactions. So the total amount of money involved, instead of being the $3 million or whatever it was, would have been like $120,000 or something significantly lower, where the guidelines would have been, I think, 6 to 12 months in prison. And the judge probably would have just, you know, done supervised release or whatever in that case, because why send someone to prison for 12 months, right?
Yeah.
So that's what the initial deal involved. But obviously I turned that down because I couldn't ethically accept this plea deal, because I did not feel that I had done anything wrong. I didn't think that selling Bitcoin constituted money transmission, and I was convinced that the judge was going to throw that charge out.
So was I.
Yeah, the judge did not throw that charge out, and it was at that point that I was like, all right, well, I'm going to lose this anyway, so I'm going to take the plea deal and make the rest of these all just go away and, you know, just minimize the damage at this point, because the judge has made his decision, and this was money transmission, and that's pretty much up and shut as far as I felt. And so the initial plea agreement, the one that was offered in April of 2022, it would be coming to an end right about now, probably, and would have certainly involved no prison time. Even then, though, it's important to remember, the prosecutors were arguing to send me to prison. They never argued that for anyone else, but they wanted to tell the judge, you know, send Aria to prison for 12 years, and they
12 months.
I'm sorry?
12 months?
Yes, 12 months, sorry. And they allowed that, you know, my attorney was very capable, and he could probably get that down to home confinement or supervised release or whatever. And, yeah, that's absolutely true. My attorney was very good. But the prison was always on the table in my particular case. And I don't know why that is. Right? I don't know what it was about me that made them go prison versus Andy and Renee and nobody that made them go time serves fine, probation is fine. So I don't know. But that was the way things played out, and I have no regrets about how the last 2 years has played out. I'm like, I don't regret the trajectory that it took. I obviously regret having sold Bitcoin to people who proved to be scammers. I mean, that who wouldn't? But I have no regrets about declining the first plea deal, is what I'm trying to say. Because, again, at the time, I couldn't justify doing that because I didn't feel that I had done anything wrong.
You have to be able to live with yourself.
Right, and if you want me to take a plea deal, well, I can't believe that I'm going to beat this charge and take the plea deal. Otherwise, that's counter to my own best interest. But once I was like, okay, I'm not going to beat this charge, taking the plea deal because I'm guilty according to how the court has defined these things, at that point, yeah, take the plea deal. I did. Today sucked for a number of reasons, but it started out badly, right?
There was one nice thing, and that was the support. There was a lot of people that came out.
A huge amount of support. Thank you to everyone. I did not expect that many people. My attorney asked me how many people were coming. I was like, well, probably about 20, because I knew 10 from my workplace were going to be there, and probably 10 or so libertarians. It was closer to 30, maybe 40 people. I tried
Chris
to count
counted,
at one point.
He said he counted at least 40 on the one side of the room, and then there was maybe a couple others that were on the other side.
There were, and some of them, were at least neutral. They were not supporters of the government. I know at least one of them was from the Boston Globe.
Yeah, there were a couple reporters.
In my support. So, well, that's loose when you're dealing with an attorney, a reporter. But the hardest part of today for me was when everything was delayed. And if you follow the sentencing memorandums, then you know that my attorney filed this thing that said basically that if the prosecutors wanted to use evidence that was revealed at trial and the judge wanted to rely on this evidence for sentencing, then they had to give us 90 days to go over the court transcripts. Well, that was kind of cool because it allowed us...
Evidence from my trial, just to be clear.
Yes. That was kind of cool because it gave me evidence to the transcripts. So I have those and I've been reading those and it's tremendously fascinating. But it's like 2,000, 3,000 pages of stuff here. Mm-hmm. And like, right. I don't want to read all this. Right. But my attorney came out to me, you know, when the delay happened, it was like 10:20 at this point, so we're already 20 minutes late. And I was like, well, thank you for pulling me out of there because they're being very loud, because it was 30 or 40 people. I was like, and eventually the judge or a bailiff or somebody's going to come out there and yell at them, and I don't want to be part of that when that happens, because I'm about to be the one sentenced. I don't want to make the judge angry. He goes, well, they're about to be a lot louder when they hear this news. We're pushing the hearing back. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what do you mean? And he went over, you know, you remember that thing about the trial? He's like, so what do you want to do? And I sat there for a few minutes. Like, you want to take about 20 minutes to think about it? I said, no, I don't. I want to move forward with the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, just so you know, my sense of things is that the judge is going to incarcerate. Mm-hmm. If we delay it and, you know, we go with these transcripts, we might be able to prevent that. I said, we're moving forward today, ma'am.
And I don't think it would have. I mean, they didn't rely on it at all. That, like, the judge basically said he wasn't going to take it into advisement, and they didn't even really drag it out.
And I suspect it was my decision to move forward today that pulled all of that off the table.
Maybe.
Right? Like, if I had said, okay, yes, we want time to go over this, at that point, the prosecutors would have to use that all of that stuff, right?
Because
there was a delay specifically for them to do that. But by moving forward today, as you said, the judge didn't even rely on that information, and...
And he shouldn't have. It had absolutely nothing to do with your case. They dropped those charges against you. They shouldn't be able to tar you with what happened in my case at all.
That kind of happens. I mean, you know, that's how people are, and there's no way for the judge to not be a person.
I don't know. He seems good at separating himself from that subjectivity, though, and look at things in a more analytical perspective. I got to give him credit on that. But I was also pleased that there in open court, my attorney acknowledged that he and I have been having disagreement, I think was the word he used, about whether or not I had, quote, fallen into a bad crowd or whatever. I don't remember exactly how he put it, but the judge was like, well, I think your client would disagree with that assessment. I was like, yes, I would disagree with that assessment. That's not fair at all to my friends that are here to support me and the friends that have been there by my side for the last 5 years. I did not at all fall into a wrong crowd. So that was nice because there were parts of the sentencing memorandum that Richard Fowle that I didn't necessarily care for. Is like, they didn't throw you under the bus, but it was like, here's a bus, and here's Ian, and let's put those two things together. And I didn't care for that. So luckily, I got the opportunity today to address that to a degree and to point out that, you know, I'm my own person. I made my decisions. No one put me up to this. No one manipulated me into doing this. I was there by my own decisions and by my own actions. And the result is 18 months imprisonment. I do get to self-report, which is great.
It's really great.
My attorney had made it out like that was almost a given, right? Yeah, sure, there's some chance of me getting...
He actually seemed... the judge seemed to suggest that it was because you are trans...
Yes, he did.
...is why you were able to self-report, because the Bureau of Prisons may need time to determine what the best location is for you, as far as they got some kind of program, supposedly.
Yeah, they have a council. They have a board.
Yeah, whatever
right?
that means.
Well, what this means is that generally people going into the prison system are, you know, they transition inside the prison system. So you're going to deal with a man, someone who's in the male's prison who's transitioning to female, and the council has to make sure, you know, this is sincere and this person's actually trans and all of this other stuff, or the other way around with a female transitioning to men, although I can't imagine that actually happening in prison, but maybe it does.
Yeah.
But the point of the self-reporting in this case is to allow the councils and the boards and all of that to make the determination about me. They're basically verifying whether or not I'm actually trans. From what I read of the Bureau of Prisons guidelines, that's essentially what they're doing. And I think in my case, it's pretty definitive, right?
Like, yeah, it's clear you didn't become trans during this process.
Right.
This isn't something you're like, ooh, I want to be in the different, you know, prison.
Well,
so.
I don't want to be in prison at all, right?
Right.
But,
right.
And I don't think that being in a women's prison is going to be any better than being in a men's prison.
I just found out something today from you that really surprised me about trans people and prison, and that is they can't create special prisons for trans people. Sort of a Plessy versus Ferguson thing. Separate is not equal, or maybe that's Brown versus Brown versus Topeka, Kansas. I can't remember.
Well, segregation is illegal. Right?
You can't
do that.
I mean, the only reasonable thing to me seems like creating another prison for trans people. Like, that's the way to go about this, but that's not an option.
It is not, and I don't know that that's a good way to go about this. I don't know what issue you take with me being thrown into a women's prison, but what's the issue there?
I would say that I don't take any particular issue, but I can totally see the problem. And that issue is what is called a penis within most circles, and
because
that cause disruption?
Because lesbians in prison could never think of a way to sexually stimulate one another, right?
Well, some people would object. You know, there's going to be some people who are upset about it. That's just the nature of the thing.
But it's none of their business either. And it's like the presumption is that I'm going to go into this minimum security prison and
plow your way through it.
Yeah, that's silly, right? Mm-hmm. That's absolutely absurd. Most of the women that I will be doing
good
time
chance
with,
if you were to do that, you would end up in a much higher security facility because you'd be a problem, right? Like if you were to go in there and somebody says, "Oh, Arya had sex with me," and I didn't want that, well, then you're going to have a serious problem.
Well, see, I was assuming it was all going to be consensual in the first place, right? It never even occurred to me that someone could take that particular approach where I was violating.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Some of the ladies in prison aren't so nice.
Mm-hmm. It's minimum security, man. I'm not even going to be in legit prison. It's a prison camp around Danbury. It's got like 89... Probably Danbury, Connecticut. Connecticut. That seems like the likeliest place. There's also one in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But any of the facilities that I go to, from what I can tell, and based on what the judge said today, will be in one of these prison camps and not the actual prison. And I don't know. I haven't been able to find the difference between a prison and a prison camp, except that the camp is located at the prison. But when I asked my attorney this, his answer was, well, the prison camp, you don't have bars.
Right. Also, prison camps when we're referring to Florida state prisons, at least, usually means that there's a very good chance that your job is outside of the gate, working within the community in some way. And I don't mean, helping little old ladies across the street. I mean mowing the grass.
I don't know. That's a question I have, too, is does federal prison have those sorts of jobs? Because I know that when I went to jail here in New Hampshire 10, 11 years ago or whatever it was, that was a working sentence. Like, I was sentenced to, quote-unquote, hard labor. I don't think that is the case here, and I wonder about that. But we're going to learn more about it because we're actually going to have Mark Hopkins on the show 1 week from tonight. He's that guy that was in Texas selling Bitcoin, and he went to prison for several months for it as well. We'll continue. There's more coming up on Free Talk Live.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. A new poll released today shows a majority of Americans don't want either President Biden or former President Trump to run in 2024. The Reuters Ipsos poll found that 45% of Democrats don't want Biden to run again, compared to 34% of Republicans who say the same about Trump. The poll coming out the same day, Biden released a video formally announcing that he is running in 2024.
Every generation of Americans has faced a moment when they have to defend democracy. Stand up for our personal freedom. Stand up for the right to vote and our civil rights.
The president's already said Vice President Kamala Harris will be his running mate. Scientists in Oklahoma think they found a link between diet and autoimmune disease. The researchers say it could be key in preventing multiple sclerosis. The research found that a high-fat, low-carb, and fiber-enriched diet prevented the onset of MS symptoms in mice. John Schaefer, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
So great day in court, but it could have been worse day.
I don't know, man. You know, I don't like spending my life waiting, but there's such an enormous wait. I did not sleep last night at all. Well, yeah, I slept maybe 20 total minutes, right?
Yep.
But after, once I got home today, I tried to eat, and then I lay down to take a nap. And it wasn't very good sleep because I'm generally not very good at taking naps anyway, but I think I probably slept like 10 minutes or whatever. But the nature of the sleep was fundamentally different than any sleep that I've had in the last 2 years. Mm. It was far more restful. So this enormous weight has been lifted from me, and I'm looking forward to sleeping for the first time in like 2.5 years.
I hear you. So, I mean, from that perspective, this was a good day, you know, from that perspective. But
yeah, you're right. I don't want to call it a good day.
It could have been a better day. And we're talking about the 18-month sentence that you've received here for the dastardly, quote-unquote, crime of operating a unlicensed money-transmitting business, which you pled guilty to, understandably, because going up against a jury is... It's a pretty dicey situation, as we found out with my case, where we were somewhat optimistic that maybe some of the charges would be found not guilty, and nope. Jury came back with 100% guilty findings on every single count, even though, as we are going to argue in the appeal on my case, is that the prosecution never proved any of those counts. As I've pointed out in what few interviews I've done since the verdict came in, is my belief is the jury just simply wanted to convict me, not because there was a finding of, like, a reasonable finding of guilt, like that, you have to find somebody guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, right? Like, the evidence has to be crystal clear.
Yeah.
And I think that the evidence was definitely not, and they found me guilty anyway. I mean, they just didn't like me. They wanted somebody to get punished for what happened to these old ladies and these old guys, which were very sad stories. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I had nothing to do with it, but I was the guy at the defense table. And they didn't have the actual scam artists that did these things to these people. So I think the jury was just like, oh, well, we're just going to do the reverse of jury nullification. Not that they knew what jury nullification was, because that never came up during the trial. It was forbidden to be talked about. I don't think it would have helped anyway, because I think what they did was they just were like, well, we can find them guilty if we want to.
Yeah, I think the whole... I have a fundamental problem with jury trials that I had prior to this whole thing, and that's only been reinforced by this. Like, as Bonnie, I think it was Bonnie, did Bonnie point it out? Someone pointed out, you can't really separate, no, it was Mark, I don't know why it was Bonnie, I guess because I was looking at Bonnie when Mark said it. You can't separate a person from their humanity, right? You can't expect a judge to completely disregard all of these emotions and stuff like that and make a decision based solely upon the facts. And I think the whole point of having a judge is that a judge is supposed to be trained in doing exactly that. Whereas a jury, these are just ordinary people, and emotions play a huge role, probably the biggest role in the average person's life, far right. more importantly than facts do, because, like, you have people out there who don't care what the facts actually are. They only care what they believe, and they will base their entire worldview based on what they feel is right. And those are the kinds of person who become jurors, who go out there and you weave a story for a jury. If you convince them that story is true, then they will vote not guilty or guilty in correspondence with that story.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, they're not algorithms that you plug a bunch of facts into.
Right, it's the old Perry Mason thing, right?
I don't know what that means.
TV attorney.
Okay. But they're not an algorithm that you plug a bunch of
Perry
facts
Mason
into
thing
and
was
tell
you've got to tell a story.
Yeah. And that's what the prosecutors did in the trial.
They
told a story of Ian being this cyber criminal mastermind or whatever who was, with a wink and a nod, doing business with scammers or whatever, mm-hmm. and the jury bought that story. And it wasn't a matter of being convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
But the amazing thing was they could trot all these people out that somehow believed what the scammers say, but Ian was supposed to be able to tell the difference. Ian, a person who I wouldn't claim is even above the mean on being able to judge the real intents behind an individual, but you know, the jury thought he was able to do that, and clearly Ian's lawyer misjudged how to set this case up.
Well, I don't know what Ian's jury thought or what they felt or what they didn't. I was just making the point that I think a jury is not a robot or an artificial intelligence that you plug facts into and have it present you with the probability of likelihood, right? They're human beings who are flawed, sure. who base their opinions and their ideas on emotions. And if you appeal to their emotions,
and
which is the whole point
of many times.
The whole point of having the elderly scam victims right. come out there was to paint that story, was to appeal to their emotions.
Let's go to the phones here.
I've said many times before and since. Is there something wrong with my audio, guys?
No, you go right ahead. I think you're maybe slightly delayed, but go ahead.
Okay. Must be. Terribly sorry about that. So I said many times that I don't trust juries, and frankly, I think Ian would have been better off. I watched this trial more than I watched any other, and I think he would have been better off with a 3-judge panel.
Yep, well, too late now. I mean, we'll get a panel at the appeals court level, maybe, but not at this point. Let's go to the phones here. We got Tom on the line here in New Hampshire. You're on Free Talk Live, Tom.
Yeah, the key word in the charge is operating an unlicensed money transmission business. Money is the key word, and the question of whether Bitcoin is money, I don't think that the statutes are clear on that. You can argue that it's not money, or that if it is money, then the statutes should be more clear, and you're denied due process of law by forcing you to try to figure out, because it's fatally vague and uncertain, issues like that. And you know what they say, even a banana has the right to appeal. So you should definitely...
As somebody who has taken a plea deal, you limit seriously your rights of appeal.
Tom, I want to say, first of all, thanks for coming out today. Second of all, the conversation about whether or not Bitcoin is money, that occurred in, I think, October of last year prior to the trial at the Daubert hearing / the motion to dismiss counts 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, it was my contention that it wasn't money transmission, primarily because there wasn't a third party and because Bitcoin wasn't money. And I expected us to have this great, big, long, philosophical discussion about the nature of money and whether or not Bitcoin constitutes money. And ultimately, the judge said, nope, it's money. And he banged his gavel, and that was the end of it.
So, but that is a point that I suspect you can say that you pled guilty based on the idea that Bitcoin was money, and therefore you can still appeal on that issue. I don't know. I mean, you talk to the lawyers.
You are correct to a degree. I can't appeal it. But if Ian wins his appeal, then yes, I can then appeal mine and have my guilty plea overturned. Yes, that much is true.
Okay, so...
after you've already served, likely after you've already served 18 months.
That's why I'm not...
right, after you've served your sentence.
That's why I'm not appealing the sentence, which a lot of libertarians seem to be unhappy about. Well, first of all, it's my life, so I don't care if they're unhappy or not. But second of all, by the time I got this appeal before a court, I would be done serving the sentence.
Yeah, Mark Sistine is my attorney. He says he's been waiting a year for a hearing at the appeals court. So,
Yeah, it's terrible because they go so slowly. Yes, I was there, one of the people, the dozens of people who were there when Aria was at the hearing. I was there when the judge handed them the 18 months. That's actually 540 days because when you do months, it's not calendar months. It's to make them all equal. It's 30 days, so that's 540 days, incidentally.
I think I prefer to think about it as 18 months. That feels shorter to me.
Yeah. So, and anyway, it's terrible that this stuff happened. It's kind of like, okay, if you outside the ballpark, you're selling T-shirts and ball caps and baseball bats, and somebody buys a baseball bat and uses it to commit a crime, are you responsible for it? Oh, yeah, well, you didn't have a license to sell this stuff. You're doing it unlicensed, and therefore you're guilty of somebody else's murder? I don't think so.
Well, this actually came up today at the hearing, where apparently it's a thing that happens a lot in federal court where they talk about buying guns for other people or something along those lines, and the judge made the point that they don't even consider that argument when it comes to guns because it's just so obvious that if you buy someone a gun and it's not in their name or whatever, then that in itself constitutes using it for a crime. So by definition, the gun is going to be used for a crime. And as my attorney pointed out, yes, but that isn't necessarily true of Bitcoin. Selling someone Bitcoin is not inherently a crime in the same way that falsely giving someone a gun is a crime. So there is that fundamental difference there, and that was neat to listen to. I wasn't in a particularly great mindset to absorb and enjoy the philosophical back and forth that went on over that, but it did happen. And it was, even in my state, I still found it fascinating to, it was a little frustrating because, I wanted to get on with the actual sentencing, and for a lot of it, it felt like the prosecutors were just, you know, that guy from the Clear Eyes commercial that speaks dryly and real boring. I mean, that's Seth Ephraim, right? He just rattled off all of these boring, tedious codes and facts, and that's what he does, and that's why he's a prosecutor. And then my attorney got up there and he said his piece, and it felt to me like it was just this great intellectual exercise that was completely removed from me as a human being. And that sucked. And there was no way I attempted to at first to drag it back into the human sphere, but I failed at that, and I don't know that it would have made any difference anyway. But the little speech that I gave, it started out really awkwardly, and I ultimately got into it, and it got a little bit better. But it was always this intellectual exercise that just felt divorced from me as a human being. It felt like machines sitting around calculating the most likely outcome. And, I mean, that's not what it was, obviously, but it didn't feel like it treated me like a human being.
Yeah, thank you for the call tonight, Tom. I appreciate it. Yeah, certainly the...
And that's what I'm saying. The process did not feel like it treated me like a human being.
That's what the court system does. I mean, you are just a number to them, right? You have a name, but you're just another case, just another brick in the wall, right? Somebody
else.
Well,
the last name, right?
He's got to be sentenced.
And that was one of the frustrating things about the sentencing memorandums. And you can't help but notice it, that the prosecutors persistently, but I didn't even mention this, by the way, but if you read their sentencing memorandum, Freeman here, mm-hmm. is mentioned 38 times in my sentencing memorandum,
right.
whereas I am mentioned, DeMezzo, only 39 times. So, like, Freeman here got almost exactly as many mentions as I did. Like, my sentencing memorandum was as much about Freeman here. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my point is that to the prosecutors, I'm not even Aria. I'm DeMezzo.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not even Ian, you're Freeman. And this is why there's such a huge... You can pick any random document in these court proceedings and find out exactly which side produced it, whether or not it humanizes you or dehumanizes you. And if they use your first name, if they treat you like a human being, it's a defense document. And if they treat you like...
Really? He puts your first name in there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And I'm sure Sisti does as well.
I just never know.
And I just did it to Sisti, but I don't think it would feel weird to call Sisti.
People just call him Sisti.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like the prosecutors make a calculated... The whole system makes a calculated effort to use a person's last name in a method, in a way of dehumanizing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though the system, the Constitution, prohibits sentences that are not concomitant with the actual crime, right? Like, you're supposed to, there's not supposed to be some crazy sentence for some victimless crime or whatever. I mean, I don't remember the exact wording. I think it's in the Fifth Amendment somewhere, if I recall correctly. But
something about cruel and unusual punishment,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think that's number six, right, Mark?
He dropped off. He had some sort of connection issue, but it's one of those two.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's not important. I mean, it's numbers and words.
And the fact is, there's no victim in this case. This is a paperwork case wherein, had you filed the paperwork, then you would have been totally fine, at least as far as this charge is concerned. Now, we know that's not necessarily true, and we're going to learn more about that with Mark Hopkins, our guest that we're going to hopefully have on in 1 week, because he did get the government paperwork that you were charged with not having. It's just that he didn't get the paperwork from Texas, because Texas, their banking department told him, there is no paperwork. You're fine. Go ahead. Sell the Bitcoin. Everything's fine. And then the federal government brought him up on a variant of the, I believe it's the same sort of section that you get charged with, but like section B or C.
So
or
in theory, if I had had that license from the federal government, which seems very unlikely,
mm-hmm.
but if I had that license, would they have charged me with not having a New Hampshire license?
They probably would have, yeah.
I feel confident in New Hampshire that would have gotten beaten by a New Hampshire judge. I don't know. You know, and I've been wrong about this whole thing more often than not.
Well, they can't take the state law under consideration, I guess, in federal court.
Well, it seems like if they're going to charge you with violating, if a federal court is going to charge you with violating, yeah, and there is no state law.
And you would have probably, well, I mean, who knows? Of course, they would also hit you with a dozen other charges, so you would have still been under the same pressure. But the point is, you know, in that case, in both of your cases, there's no victim.
Right.
But yet you both actually got sentenced to a similar level of time. He got 15 months, you got 18. And so it's going to be interesting to talk to him next week and see, you know, what his experience was like. He obviously was in the Texas district, so was in a different facility, but we'll be able to kind of pepper him with some questions and see, you know, exactly what his case was and how crazy they were, because they basically threatened to indict his wife if he didn't take the plea deal, essentially held her hostage.
Yeah, that's so evil, man.
I mean,
that is, like, trying to give me 37 months is one thing, but, like, trying to hold this man's wife hostage? That's a new level.
It is
of evil.
The lows that these people are willing to go to, and because they don't consider the people who are the those who are the defendants in this system to be humans for whatever reason. I mean, I'm sure if you asked them, they would say, "Oh yeah, of course, yeah, Ari is a human," and but they don't treat you like that. You're just treated like another case.
Yeah, I was the last name to them. Yeah. Humans don't go by their last names. They go by their first names.
Let's continue here with more of your calls. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Aria. Mark may be rejoining us at some point, but what is your name? Hello?
Anonymous.
You're on the air, Anonymous. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I saw the latest Crypto 6 comics. Thought they're pretty good.
Comics?
Yeah, it's comic strip. I think I saw posted on Twitter. Or somewhere. Somewhere.
Someone's making comic strips?
I have not heard about this. Where does one find them?
On the interweb somewhere.
Okay, well, if you found it on Twitter, there's probably a username associated with it. Do you know who's posting them?
I forget.
Okay. Well, that's kind of useless to talk about it then if you can't really share it with anyone. Anything else you want to share?
I wonder if he means the panel of four pictures that the Crypto 6 documentary put together, and he's referring to that as a comic.
I haven't been to Comic-Con yet, boy.
What's that?
Are you talking about the photographs of Aria with the text on it, like kind of like a meme? Or you mean like an actual comic with drawings?
Maybe not.
Huh? Is he trying to troll?
Are you just really high?
I wish.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call. I don't know what that was about.
I don't either. He mentioned that he hadn't been to Comic-Con yet, so that was at the point at which I assumed he must be trying to make a joke. But, like, I don't know what the joke could possibly have been.
Yeah, I don't either.
That happens with some of the... And I don't know whether or not he was trolling. If not, I apologize, but you didn't exactly make yourself clear. But that does happen a lot of times with trolls, where they seem to want to make a joke, and they try to make a joke, but they don't successfully do so, and it just comes off being weird, sort of like that.
We may have Mark back. Mark, are you with us?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. We got you.
Okay.
That was much more responsive as well.
Good. I hope so. I've switched computers now.
Okay. Well, very good. Was there anything else you wanted to say about today's sentencing hearing, Aria?
No, I'm glad to be moving forward into the next stage of this. Obviously, I wish the next stage was something different and was home confinement versus prison, but I will be happy to have this behind me.
There was one other thing. Go ahead.
I do have another question. What are the chances that 18 months in prison isn't 18 months in prison?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's most likely, with good behavior and all of that, it's most likely going to be 15 months, right? However... Okay. With federal, you serve a portion of your sentence in a halfway house. And I don't remember exactly what that portion is, and I don't remember all the specifics.
It seems to be up to the Bureau of Prisons, but I don't know what the rules are.
When Chris Cantwell called and talked about it, he suggested that there was like a minimum amount of time that you were supposed to get in a halfway house, or like a minimum portion of your sentence.
But he didn't get it. No. He only got 1 month.
And he was fighting, though, about that, and they were like, well, we'll give you more time in the halfway house if that's what you want. Obviously, that's not what he wanted. He wanted it to be over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, he's correct, and assuming things go correctly, then it's most likely going to be 15 months, probably three of which, I would guess, would be spent in a halfway house, whatever that means.
Do they have nothing that they would call work release?
That's the halfway house, basically, as I understand it. Now, they may have different programs we're not aware of, but when you're in the halfway house, you are able to go out and...
I would just about rather skip that. And I can't say how I'm going to feel in a year, but where I'm based on right now... Having me out, quote, in the real world of being free again, but not being able to come back to Keene and being with my friends and being with my family or whatever, that would be possibly worse for me emotionally and spiritually than just keeping me in prison for another 3 months. I don't know. You know, I don't know how I'm going to feel a year from now. But my gut tells me right now, you mean I'm free and I'm out here in this house, but I still can't have my cats. That's torturous, in my opinion.
Well, I had the decision as to whether or not I wanted to spend the last little bit of my prison sentence in prison or whether I wanted to go to work release. And there was no doubt in my mind that work release was superior to prison. So,
well, I plan on doing a lot of working in prison anyway. I mean, by trade, I was a writer, and I've just been too busy for the last 4 or 5 years to really pursue that. But I'm about to have plenty of time to do that, so... I won't be free and out there in society, you know, working a job or whatever, but that doesn't mean I won't be productive.
So, according to what Mark Hopkins told me today, I traded a few messages with him after your sentencing just to kind of see what his story was. Again, he got that 15-month sentence. He spent 7 months in prison and then was released to RRC. I don't have what that acronym stands for at the moment, but that is essentially the halfway house situation, okay, as I understand it. And
now, do you get to choose the halfway house, or do they just...
No, it would be Manchester. That's the one they have up this way.
They wouldn't even put me in Keene?
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to point out here. So it's called Residential Reentry Management Centers. The idea is to help somebody get back, purportedly, to help somebody reintegrate into society.
Which is, let me go back to my house, and we'll be fine.
Right, and that's the thing. He does add in here, he says, I've been prohibited from home confinement for reasons the Bureau of Prisons won't elaborate on. Typical, you know, government bureaucracies. You can't get an answer from anybody. You got to wait around for everything. So what he says there suggests that home confinement may be an option in lieu of going to the halfway house for some people. For him, for whatever reason, okay, they're saying he can't do that. So who knows what, you know, they're going to say about you. But,
well, hopefully they'll let me do home confinement because that would be significantly less disruptive to my life.
Well,
do
right,
I have to return
like
to my cats
to...
and my dog and, you know, all my bills and stuff sooner?
Right. It's like, it's not like you have to go and get a brand new job or something like that. You're going to have probably one, if not two jobs waiting for you when you get out. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I presume Domino's is willing to take you back. And certainly we are. We're
absolutely
welcoming you back. Right. So it's not like you've got to, like, figure out how to get back out there again. And you need 6 whole months and a halfway house to figure that out. So it'll be interesting to see how that that pans out, but it does sound like from what he's saying that could be an option for somebody.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's what I'm thinking.
But it's up to the Bureau of Prisons, not the judge.
It's an unpleasant vacation, but this is, in the grand scheme of things, just an extended vacation.
That's how I looked at it when I got sent to prison, or not prison, but jail in my case, back in 2011. I said, you know what? I don't ever take vacations, so this is my vacation, and I'm going to treat it and have as much of a positive experience that I can out of it. And it ended up being, all things considered, a relatively positive experience.
I tried to be positive today, and I'm continuing to try to be positive because, you know, there are a lot of things that are worse, and a lot of good can come as a result of this. You know, there's a silver lining to every dark cloud, and I think this can be a good thing. It's not what I would choose for myself if given the option, but that doesn't mean it has to be bad.
We're going to continue. Your calls and thoughts are welcome. Hour number two is on the way. Plus, we got some news about the latest hot thing in artificial intelligence, and we'll share that with you coming up here. It is Free Talk Live.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare, and the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25% to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.